welcome to Gin and Topic. We have tasted the gin and now we get on to our topic. Hey, Anya.
Hello, Sarah. It's Friday and we're about to learn something and drink some gin.
We are. What could get better than that?
Honestly, I don't know because we've been doing this for 6 series, so clearly we enjoy it.
And hopefully others do too. So, drink and let's learn.
Let's learn. See you in a minute.
So, how are you feeling about episode 2 then, Anya?
I mean, I'm always feeling great because I never know what's coming and I just know I've got gin. And therefore, I go into it blind and excited.
Brilliant. So, blind and excited, do you want to know what this week's about?
Sorry, I just made a title of your sex tape joke in my head and it's making me laugh too much.
Excellent.
Yes, excellent. I do.
I like it.
Thank
you. Yeah,
it's blind and excited.
It's a good one. Yeah, very good. Anyway,
I'm an adult.
Gin and topic. We've got gin. The topic is...
What is it?
Plankton physics.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So this week we are talking to Russell Arnott, who's a marine biologist, oceanographer, science presenter, and director of Incredible Oceans, which is a marine education non-profit organisation.
Oh, we love a non-profit. And that is a good collection of things right there.
It is, isn't it?
Mm.
And so he's going to talk to us about plankton physics.
Okay.
We'll explore that topic with him in a bit.
Yeah.
And, of course, we're drinking gin.
Yay! Always.
Which you will have tasted with us on Tuesday.
Boosday Tuesday.
So we are drinking, got to get this right, Deville.
Are you confident in that?
Deville. That is it. Spelt D-A, second word, M-H-I-L-E.
Mm-hmm.
Deville.
Lovely.
Love a Celtic name. I mean, it's Welsh, it's not Irish, but it's Celtic and it's cool and it's pronounced nowhere near how it's spelt.
Can you try and just do that in a Welsh accent then, please?
No, can't do Welsh accents. Can you?
No. Which is, it's really bad because I'm in Bristol. I should be able to because they're right there.
They're not far.
But I'm not good at accents.
Oh, well. So, Russell.
Hello.
Welcome to Gin and Topic. We've tasted your gin. We like your gin.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to look forward to drinking the rest of your gin. Whilst we talk, not seaweed, but plankton physics.
Mm-hmm.
Yay. My favourite topic of conversation while I'm having a gin and tonic.
This is why the podcast started, because we were like, we love talking about random things over gin. And here we are getting people on to talk about something that they want to talk about.
Oh, yeah. So the first thing we have to do is let you enjoy some more of your gin whilst Anya and I empty our receptacles of knowledge about plankton physics and educate you as to what we know and how we would answer the question of why should you care about plankton?
Ooh.
So, enjoy your gin. Here we go.
I shall.
Okay.
What do we know about plankton? I know it's green.
I go to the SpongeBob character.
It's green.
I think there was a SpongeBob character called Plankton. It might have been a different animated cartoon. I don't really know. Basically, the bar is on the floor. And physics, I'm not much better.
Okay, so at least that was to do with the sea. A little bit of SpongeBob. They were under the sea, weren't they?
Yes, yeah. Who lives in a pineapple under the sea.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's right. Don't think there are pineapples in plankton, but begins with a P. So we got that little connection
Brilliant.
Too. So that's perfect. Right, plankton. I'm getting sort of images of green stuff.
Yeah.
Like, algae. Is algae plankton? Is plankton algae? Is it plankton anything to do with seaweed? What's the... I don't know. But that's the kind of image that I've got.
Okay.
But I'm also thinking that's quite sort of, I don't know, biological? chemical, but
so you don't associate physics? It with physics.
So then I'm like, what are we going to look? Oh, is this the, like, the buoyancy of plankton?
Mm.
You know, how
that was a very intelligent much force thing to say, you can Sarah.
Put onto a plankton.
Okay.
I'm just dredging up my old physics A level that I failed twice.
I failed GCSE physics. So.
You know, when you retake an A level, you're meant to go up a grade. I went down a grade. Ooh. And was told not to retake it again. But I loved physics, loved it, just couldn't regurgitate it at exams, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. So, but back to plankton, regurgitating plankton. I don't know, would you eat it? I don't know. Why should we care about plankton?
I have a feeling I'm going to bring in the word ecosystems.
Oh, nice. Yeah. That's a good word. Yeah. Like that.
And I'm going to quit while I'm ahead. That's all I've got. That's literally yeah. everything.
Do you think that then that we should care because plankton might be like a signalling of oceans warming, changing?
Oh, Sarah, you're on fire. Look at you go.
Do you think? So is that how we should care about? Yeah. I think maybe. Maybe we're on the right lines. But I think we need to learn a lot more about plankton.
I don't know what you mean.
Maybe starting
Russell,
with
I think we've told
exactly
everyone
what it
everything,
is.
Right?
Well, I've got to say that this is the most impressive. That normally, when I do this talk in pubs and things like that,
nice.
And I ask people, what do you know about plankton? And most people know that it's small, mm-hmm. that whales eat it, and that there's one in SpongeBob.
You work for it. Yay, I got one!
And so small.
Yeah.
What kind of small?
What kind of small? So the word plankton means, it comes from the Greek word planktus, which means to float or to drift. So its kind of definition is anything that can't swim away from a current. Right. It has to go where it's kind of told. And so you've got like kind of big stuff like macro zooplankton. Ooh. Which, I don't know, would be like things like fish larvae, mm-hmm. might be about 5 millimetres long. And they kind of have to go where they're told. And then it goes all the way down and down and down and down, smaller and smaller, where you've even got bacteria plankton and vireoplankton, which are marine viruses.
Okay. So really, really bloody small, basically.
So then we're going back to our episode on microbes.
Ah, yes.
And, you know, really tiny things that can slurp spaghetti with little teethy mouths. So I had in my head plankton plant.
Oh, yeah. So what you've got, the zooplankton, which are the tiny animals.
Yeah.
My area is the phytoplankton, which is the tiny plants.
Right.
Which the zooplankton eat, if you think of like a food chain.
Yeah.
And then you've got these bacteria and these viruses which attack the plants and cause those cells to pop open. But essentially,
but all of those are planktons.
All of these are plankton. So when someone says to me, like, what do you study? I obviously go plankton because then people have a rough idea. But if I say phytoplankton, then people are a bit like, oh, what is that? So you were talking about algae just then, and that is roughly what it is. Okay. Algae and phytoplankton are kind of one and the same.
Okay. And seaweed?
So seaweed is classed as a macro algae because it's very big.
Ah, okay.
So is it still a plankton?
It's not a plankton, it's a macro algae. Although, again, because they have spores and things that they give off, I believe. I'm not a seaweed expert. This is the annoying thing. Because I had a background in physics, I've got these big knowledge gaps.
Nice. I love it.
We love those. So you had a background in physics and now you're doing plankton. I've got to ask how that happens.
Okay, so basically, I really hated science at school.
Been there. It's taught badly.
It was taught really badly, and I didn't really know what it was or what I was supposed to do. So I didn't do it at A level. I didn't do any sciences, but I did maths just to keep my dad happy. I did try to do mechanical maths, which is like a bit physicsy.
Yeah.
And again, I sat through a whole year of it and did the same. I got the same mark. I was like, But I really wanted to be a fine art painter. I wanted to be a famous painter. Yeah. So I did a year of a fine art painting degree before I switched to oceanography, which I still can't believe that they let me switch to oceanography.
That's such a brilliant... I love it.
I love that.
So, yeah, but because I had the maths, I obviously tended towards physical oceanography. And I guess, like, on my degree and my master's, I got a little bit frustrated, like... I wanted to learn about all the cool stuff, all like the deep ocean stuff and the fish and the whales. But because I was like the physics guy, I was not allowed to do those. So I started looking at how, because weirdly enough, the ocean doesn't recognize the different scientific disciplines. So, like, you know, so
fishes with signs going, go away. You're not qualified. Yeah, not qualified away, to
go
study
away,
us.
Physics. Go yes. away, chemistry. So I started looking at how the physics of the ocean impacts phytoplankton and how those, and I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. So I did both of my dissertations in that, and that was kind of cool. And I just thought it was really amazing that by like mixing the water, you can change what is able to live there. So I then went and worked as a commercial oceanographer for a survey company for a number of years. And then I switched and became a science teacher, which was really funny that I was teaching A-level physics, but I didn't have A-level physics.
That's sort of, that's quite normal though, isn't it, for a lot of teachers? You just need to know enough to teach the lesson. And now, plankton physics.
Plankton physics,
so, were saying about the fact that you liked that you can move water and change things in it. So what bits of physics are we talking about in terms of looking at plankton in oceans?
And please imagine I'm a year seven, because that's my level.
Okay, so on my master's, I looked at this lake near Amsterdam, which is called Lake Noumea. And it's like a tourist lake. So you go swimming and sailing on it, but it's also a reservoir. And every summer they had this problem that when it got really hot, there was like a warm layer formed at the top. So you know that thing when you go on holiday somewhere really nice and warm and you swim on the surface, but then you put your hand or your leg down, it's really cold. So that line,
so you're swimming through that warm layer though, that, you know, it shouldn't be there. You know that.
Well, you're like, oh yeah.
That bit that's gone warm.
Not because it's wee, not because it's wee.
Sarah, you're really bringing the tone down, man. Come on.
Well, that's all I could think of. You know, you're swimming through this warm layer. It's like, nope. Children have been here.
Children have, so many children are weeing in this right now.
Yeah. So, yes, the warm layer that's been heated up at the top and then the cold layer underneath.
Exactly. Not tweet. So that temperature gradient is called a thermocline. Mm-hmm. And if you are a small plankton, it's very difficult to get across that thermocline. So plankton, phytoplankton cells, some of them have a little gas bubble inside them called a vesicle. And so they are, as you quite rightly said, buoyant. Mm-hmm. So when it is nice and calm, they can float up into that warm layer, what's known as the photic layer, because it's got lots of light, where they can photosynthesize and bloom really quickly. And they bloom super quickly, and they stop sunlight from getting further down to depth, and you get what's called an algal bloom. And algal blooms happen naturally, but they can also cause lots of problems.
They don't look great to swim in. Like, you look at that, you're like, ooh.
They don't. It turns the water into like pea soup. It's really gross.
Yeah, gross.
And like, and inside the plankton cells, when they like break open, they release this chemical called josmin. It's a good
like
word.
That,
I quite like
Jasmine.
That.
That's one of those ones that if you didn't know what it meant, sure someone would name their kid it.
I'm sure someone somewhere is called Josmin.
Hello, I'm Josmin.
Short, yeah.
Exactly that accent, isn't it, with Josmin?
You've got to meet my new girlfriend. This is Josmin. Hi, Papa.
Oh, yeah. Jozzy for short, darling.
Josmin. So, Josmin is this chemical, and it causes, it's really musty.
Oh, of course Josmin's musty.
Josmin is musty. Of course she is.
You're never going to be able to say that the
swiftly,
same way.
Moving swiftly past Josmin.
musty jasmine. But water companies spend a lot of money to get rid of musty jasmine because humans can detect 1 nanogram in a litre of water of jasmine.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's the same chemical that camels smell that help them find water in the desert.
Cool.
Whoa.
That is
so they smell it and go, yay, yay, water. We smell it and go, it's off.
We're like, I'm going to call
not gonna drink that.
Off what? And go, I think you'll find my tap water was musty. So that's one of the problems. There's loads of other problems from algal blooms, which I'll get onto, but I'll talk about my lake at the moment. So this lake looked gross. It looked like pea soup and it was like, horrible. So what they did is they put hose pipes with holes in along the bottom of the lake with it attached to an air compressor, and they blew bubbles up through the lake.
Like what you put in a pump, in a pond. You put in a little pump to get air through.
Oh, somebody's been listening to Father Building the Pond recently.
Thinking about your dad's garden, you know, and making sure that the pond is clear.
Have you actually been paying, like, attention when he's telling you about the pond? Because I just like nod and go, yeah, great.
Yeah, but I like the sound. That's it.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, it's good. Well, generally in ponds, they do the aeration to put air in there so the things can breathe. We were using these air bubbles to break that stratification. And if you were a cell that could float up to the top, all of a sudden, instead of being trapped at the top, you were mixed throughout the whole depth.
I'm feeling really sorry for them because they have no control over this. They're like, I've become buoyant and I've got up to this and this is great and I'm photosynthesizing and then I'm being blasted around the place. You know, the poor little things.
But these ones, they're called Microcystis, and these ones are douchebags. Okay. I'll tell you why they're douchebags.
Because they hang out with jasmine.
Okay? They hang out with, all of them hang out with jasmine. All of them do. So there's like, no one really knows how many species of phytoplankton there are. Some people reckon there might be around 1 million, but there's about 250 of them are toxic.
Okay.
And so if you were to go swimming in this water, you would maybe end up with like an irritated skin. It would hurt your eyes. If you swallowed it, you would get probably nausea, diarrhea, something like that. It's not fun, but the big problem is when it works its way up through the food chain. So if a big toxic algal bloom happens near an oyster bed, and this is a thing that happened off the coast of Alaska a couple of years ago, it was a big mussel bed, and mussels are filter feeders.
Yeah.
So they filter fed all the toxic plankton, and the toxin built up to a next like level, and all the mussels died. So then in came the lobsters, who eat dead things on the seafloor. The lobsters ate the mussels, and then all the lobsters died. But at that point, the toxin had accumulated a next level. It had gone up another level of concentration. So then all the lobsters are dead and floating on the surface. In come the sea otters. The sea otters then eat
and
the
now
dead
suddenly
lobsters.
People care more because they're like cute and furry and
it's cute and furry. So the sea otters died, and then the sea otters were dead and floating. In came the orcas to eat the sea otters. And at that point, the toxin was so concentrated because it had bioaccumulated up the trophic levels that it was strong enough to kill an orca.
Wow.
And just in the US, these toxic algal blooms cost the economy $1.2 billion a year.
So how many times do they happen a year then?
They happen so much a year. Like, and the problem that you've got is that climate change is causing that warm layer to get stronger. And you've got the addition, which is runoff from farming that flows out. And in particular, cows. Like, we've got 1 billion cows on the planet.
Cows are really bad for the planet.
Honestly, if we didn't have anything to do with cows, we wouldn't have to worry about not driving and flying and turning off lights. They are so bad.
So all that's running down, it's causing this toxic disgustingness that's...
this big bloom to happen. So what we found, by mixing the water, what happened is those floaty toxic plankton lost their competitive edge because they need a lot of light. And now they're being mixed throughout the whole depth. They're not getting as much light. So then that meant that a species that wasn't toxic, that didn't need as much light, could then become dominant. And so this nice, happy, what's called a diatom, and they're really beautiful if you look up diatoms. They've got these beautiful silicon skeletons. And they're really cool cells. And these ones became dominant.
Sarah's
instead.
Googling already.
I'm looking.
There's a guy called Klaus Kemp. And unfortunately, he passed away last year. But he was one of the last diatomists. Wow. And he used to arrange these cells the same thickness as a human hair. He would arrange them as in like bicycles or like bouquets of flowers and things like that. It's really cool. So yeah, diatoms, they are absolutely amazing. You look at them under a microscope, you're like, whoa, that is absolutely
And they
gorgeous.
Look so great because they're lovely.
And you know how we always say this knowledge we learn on Gin Topic goes into the sieve and out the bottom.
Yeah.
Are they like, do you remember when we were talking about microbes and the sort of crystal slipper of...
Oh, vaguely, yes. Because I made a Cinderella joke.
Yeah.
It sounds like it might have been, because they are microbes, because they're small, aren't they? And they probably have like a crystal slipper
thing. So then they're mixing, and therefore you've got more of the good guys rather than the bad guys because of that movement of the water.
Exactly. And so this is the weird thing because, right, so when you try to measure turbulence or how mixed something is, it's really dense and mathematical, and only like physicists and fluid dynamicists really understand it or care about it. But if you were a marine biologist, you would, and you'd be interested in what was growing there, you'd go out there and you'd measure the chemicals, you'd measure the temperature, you'd measure the salinity, you'd do all that stuff. But the turbulence plays just as much a role in all of those other things in determining what could live there. So what I'm trying to do is be a little bit of a conduit and get physics people and biology people talking to each other. So then they're like, whoa, okay, we should start being a bit more multidisciplinary. And we
Have you tried using gin in those conversations? We find it goes really well.
I probably should. I'll bring along the seaweed gin next time.
So we've talked about why the bad, evil ones are so bad, but when you've got these good ones that are there and suddenly there's more of them and it's going really well, what are they doing that's so good for it? Are they just nice or are they doing good things?
Or just not doing anything.
Yeah.
Not just being bland.
This best ever plankton fact. This is Brilliant. What I do when I do my plankton talk at school. Okay, I go, everybody, take a great big breath in. And breathe it out. And that breath came from the trees. And that's what we're taught at school, that all of the oxygen in the air that keeps us alive comes from the grass and the plants and the trees. I'd like you to take a second breath, please. Breathe that one out. And that breath didn't come from the trees. That breath came from the seas. Because phytoplankton are plants. They're in all of the world's water, and the world's oceans cover 2/3 of the planet. Then plankton are responsible for 80% of the oxygen that we are now breathing.
Well done, plankton! Even though, well done!
It's awesome. So even though we are nowhere near that sea, well, I'm not right now, the air that I'm breathing is plankton farts. Fantastic.
Brilliant. And that's one of those that's actually going to stay in my head.
That is, because one of my favourite facts that always sticks in my head is when you're drinking water, you're basically drinking dinosaur wee. Mm-hmm. So now you're also just breathing in plankton farts.
I love Brilliant. It.
Dinosaur wee, plankton farts.
Much better than, oh, thanks, trees. Yeah, I love the trees. The trees are great. Really, really appreciate them, but not as much fun.
But do you want to know why else they're awesome? Yes. Double whammy. Right. I feel like we should be saying thankton.
Oh, I so want to use the video of that, because what listeners to the podcast won't appreciate were your dancing eyebrows at the time of saying thankton. It's just brilliant.
So why else should we care about plankton? Well, because they're plants. They photosynthesize, which means they take carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere They put it into their skeleton and their carbohydrates as they grow, and then they die and they sink into the deep ocean where they're incorporated into ocean sediments.
Mm.
So the ocean has absorbed a ridiculous amount of carbon dioxide. Yeah. And if we hadn't had it, then I'm trying to remember the percentage. It's something stupid. I always get the amount of heat and the amount of carbon dioxide that the ocean absorbed muddled up. But basically, the ocean is taking a massive
amount.
It's taking a hit for the team, and is without it, we'd all be much more screwed.
I have never wanted to be down the pub discussing plankton so badly. This is brilliant. I would absolutely love this.
So, okay, so you got this good plankton that's just like doing amazing things, you know, taking stuff out of our air, giving us oxygen, all the rest of it.
Way but to minimise it, Sarah. Oh, it's just letting us breathe.
It's just,
is that all? You know.
Oh, God.
I've not finished on the good things yet.
Okay. Okay. We're weighing
you,
them up.
You go back, before you go back to the nasty ones.
Come on then, let's team good it. Plankton.
Okay. So, post-war Britain, it's 1930, and this awesome dude called Alistair Hardy, and he's based at the Fisheries Department in Lowestoft.
Who's playing him in the film version?
He's kind of a hippie. He's got a little pencil moustache. Mm-hmm. Alistair Hardy. Or I think, to be honest, instantly I just thought Christian Bale.
Done.
Ooh, nice. Yeah. Christian, right, okay. We'll get onto it.
Yeah. Okay, so Alistair Hardy, they say, Alistair, we need to get better at figuring out where the fish are so then we can target where we should send the fishing boats. And he goes, well, think about it. Because the phytoplankton are eaten by the zooplankton, the zooplankton are eaten by the fish. If we can figure out where the plankton are, we're going to know where the fish are. So he developed the most amazing thing ever. It's called the Continuous Plankton Recorder.
Ooh, it sounds like something from Doctor Who.
It is pretty cool. The CPR, right? Yeah. Look it up. It looks like the coolest steampunk kind of Heath Robinson contraption. You tow it behind a boat. And what they run this down at the Marine Biological Association in Plymouth. And it is one of the world's longest running continuous data sets.
Wow.
And what it does is plankton go in the front of it.
Yeah.
And then it sandwiches them between two reels of silk, which then go down into another reel in a big reservoir of formaldehyde.
Oh.
And so the plankton are like killed. But and then they tow it up at the other end. And then down at the Marine Biological Association, they have teams and teams of people with microscopes just analysing mile upon mile of silk to look. And they've been doing this since the 1930s. And the cool thing about it is they keep all the reels. So we could be like, where did plastics appear? And you can see gradually. You can see the plastics appear as we started using
them.
Let's
go on a gin and tonic road trip and go visit. Let's go.
But they do murder all the plankton in the formaldehyde, you know.
They do, but it's a very little amount and
it's
they need to.
Because
what you don't want is when you trap it, you don't want it to then be like living and eating and dying. You want to kind of trap it as it
straight
was.
Straight in the moment. You
know? Yeah, psh, like a freeze frame, which is why you kill it.
That is pretty cool.
That's really cool.
It is really cool.
And so it's still going on.
It's still going on. And they've got more than one of them. And so they put them on what's called a ships of opportunity. Mm-hmm. So it's not like a science ship. It's a ship that is like a cargo ship that's doing the route anyway.
Wow.
And they just say, mate, do you mind towing this behind your boat as you're going along?
And Jim, who's running the boat that day, goes, yeah, all right, sure, I'll give it a go. Yeah, whatever.
It's fine.
Yeah.
No skin off my nose.
Yeah,
I'll do
tip
it.
Tip it on. It's fine.
So it's great. And the awesome thing about Sir Alistair Hardy as well, towards the end of his life, like he wasn't content that he totally like figured out fishery science and made this. He was like, guys, I think I'm going to set up a transcendental meditation school. So he's also got a meditation school.
Oh my God, somebody make the film right now. That's brilliant.
That's really cool.
He's such a dude.
Do you think he did that from just watching plankton? It's like,
I hope so.
Meditating with the plankton.
I love Sir Alistair. He's awesome.
I love it. I love it.
So, fish and chips, that's what I got onto before I got distracted. We like eating fish and chips in this country. And we need to understand plankton better because it's the basis of 99.9% of all marine food chains.
Wow.
So we need, it's the plant.
And we need them to be eating all the good stuff. So then we've got all the good stuff, not eating the bad stuff that then kills them and everything.
If you want your Friday night fish and chips, support the plankton.
Exactly right. Thankton.
Ah, oh, there we go. Brilliant.
Somebody put it on a t-shirt.
I'll tell you some other, another plankton fact, right?
They're just coming thick and fast.
So many plankton facts, I'm made of them. So the smell of the sea, the delicious gin that we're drinking, that smell.
Yeah, the seaweed gin.
Right. That is a chemical called dimethyl sulfide that is plankton give off.
Okay.
And it goes up into the smell of the seaside. It goes up into the atmosphere where it acts as a cloud condensation nuclei. So it basically gets water particles to stick to it. Plankton make clouds. Plankton make clouds.
This is brilliant. My mind's just like, so cool. And also that smell is like the smell of, you know, going back to, you know, ye olden times, send them to the sea to recover and, you know, get their health better. That's the smell. The smell of the sea does that. Not the sea air, the smell, I'm convinced. So I'm going to thank the plankton for that.
Thankton.
And not the fresh air and the smell away from all the smog.
Because
and,
what do you do when you walk onto the beach? You go, oh, smells like sea.
Breathe in that air.
There you go.
And none of that fusty mustiness, but proper.
Proper. Because it's not the bad plankton, it's the good smell. Plankton.
Not the bad stuff. Good stuff.
Exactly right.
So tell me, should we also be caring about plankton because we're fucking up the environment for the plankton? Are we tipping the balance of good to bad?
And again, we don't get on a soapbox on this podcast, Sarah, and we don't ever.
No, we don't. Can the good plankton win, or have we got to help the good plankton?
So, climate change and these extra nutrients going into the water, that's called eutrophication. So there's the type of the bad type of plankton which give off toxins, but plankton that would normally not be bad can become bad because of those excess.
Oh my god, it's like guys when they listen to Drake too much, like they suddenly just get toxic. It's the cow poo again.
The cow poo. It's like Drake. Drake is cow poo.
And I stand by that one because his relationship with Millie Bobby Brown was a bit weird.
Yeah, okay. Now I've gone. No.
Okay.
Don't understand.
That's one for our young audience, Sarah. I'm making sure we're staying fresh.
Yeah. Grey hair.
I'm pretending that I know all about Drake. He's a duck, yeah? So good ones can become bad because of the cow poo and because of the eutrophication, the extra nutrients that we're putting on our
field. Can bad ones become good?
Ooh. No, so bad ones are always bad. Mm-hmm. It's quite cunning. What they do in science, it's called allelopathy, I think.
Wow.
I've seen it written down. I've never heard that word
said out loud.
It just
sounds like I've just made it up. I think it's a bit like allelopathy.
Allelopathy. I've never heard anyone say, and this is the problem when you're a physics guy and you read stuff, but no one, you never hear anyone say it. Basically, there's a thing that plants do where they give off a toxin and it basically acts like a herbicide and stops other things from growing, which is why they give off the toxin. So they give the toxin, they're like, ha, fuck you, other plankton.
This is my space.
You can't grow because I'm given a horrible chemical. Yeah. So that's what they do. So those do it deliberately and you can't make them become not doing that. But the other good ones, basically, it you can have too much of a good thing. And when you put loads of nutrients into the water, the plankton bloom and they don't have to be a toxic one. And what they do is they basically, it's really thick and goopy and fish can't breathe properly. Mm. It clogs their gills and they can't see, so they can't catch food.
They don't mean
to
be bad.
No, we've just put loads of extra nutrients there. But then what happens is the bloom happens, then all the cells die and they sink and then bacteria come in and rot them down. And in decomposing them, they use up all of the oxygen in the water.
Yeah.
and you end up with an oxygen dead zone. So because of cow poo, we've now got 500 oxygen dead zones around the world. Wow. Where nothing can grow. Nothing can live. Literally nothing can live.
Wow.
Because there's no oxygen.
And how big are those dead zones? If there's 500 of them, are they small or are they big?
They're pretty big. They tend to be kind of seasonal. So, and, you know, it kind of depends on, like, the heat, you know, and whether we've got that thermocline, that nice hot layer. And it depends on, you know, the farming cycle and whether who's putting what where, which is obviously related to weather patterns and all the rest of it. So, but the Gulf of Mexico is quite a bad place. They get a lot of them, a lot of oxygen dead zones there. But we've got them around Europe as well. You know, we get a lot of them in the Baltic Sea, the Mediterranean occasionally.
Screw the cows.
Screw the cows.
I've stopped caring about the cows. I've started caring about plankton. That's the progression that's happened this episode.
Good. That's what we want. That's what we want. Exactly. But I mean, I've never had plankton milk, but we've got oat milk now.
Yeah, and I'm an oat milk girl because I live in Bristol, so obviously. Plankton milk?
Yeah, and sorry, no, because that just makes me think of the pea gin that we had many episodes ago. And,
yeah, that
you know,
was a bad one.
Don't make alcohol from peas because it still tastes like peas.
When you said pea, I thought you meant urine.
No.
That might have been
the little
better.
Green vegetable.
It could have been better
little
than
green
the pea
vegetable.
Gin.
Okay. It wasn't for us. But I could imagine that plankton gin might
gin?
I don't know what what does plankton taste like?
Great question.
You know spirulina?
Yes.
That is plankton. Yes.
But people use that in drinks already. We learnt that on the last episode from this series.
We did in Sex in Space, bizarrely.
Yes.
Talked about spirulina.
I like to drink spirulina when I'm having sex in space.
Plankton's having sex in space.
Brilliant. Crossover.
Okay.
Who knew? God.
Should we be eating more plankton? But then we're not preserving the plankton. Is plankton good for you? I mean...
I think it is. So the big thing at the moment is that people are targeting krill to get omega-3.
Yes.
Yeah. As opposed to... Well, the omega-3 is originally made in phytoplankton in the... In the plant cell. So there is some research that's happening right now in the UK. It's really cool research where they're taking the genes from the plankton that make omega-3 oils and are putting it into land plants. So then we don't have to take loads of stuff out the sea, like cod liver oil. All the omega-3 or the cod liver oil is literally from plankton. So we don't have to capture krill. We don't have to catch.
We could just grow clever plants.
We can just grow the plant.
That's nice. Very clever.
I like that. Mm-hmm.
It's pretty cool, isn't it?
That's
so who'd have
cool.
thought
that is pretty cool.
Doing plant science would save the ocean and would like save our fish stocks. It's kind of cool.
It's the whole crossover. All sciences work together and look what happens.
Exactly.
So we can also thank plankton for omega-3.
Yeah.
You know, rather than thinking about, you know, oh, you got to eat your oily fish and actually it's just plankton.
It is the plankton that causes it.
Nice.
Exactly.
Clever them.
Do you want to know a good SpongeBob fact?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Go
Stephen
on,
Hillenburg, rest in peace, who invented SpongeBob, who did all the animation and came up with the characters, was a marine biologist. And plankton in SpongeBob is actually a type of zooplankton called a copepod.
Brilliant! Brilliant!
I love a little public engagement that gets onto TV for kids and then just goes off.
And then suddenly everyone's hearing about plankton. I love it.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Nice.
It's good, isn't it? No, I think he's great. I'm a big fan because I'm just like, oh my God, it's brilliant. There's like a plankton in the public consciousness. Here he is. Copepods. And these are the main things that fish eat. So Sir Alistair Hardy, he was well into copepods, well into them.
Well done.
It's another public engagement right there, Sarah. When that film comes out, we're sorted.
Oh my God, Christian Bale and plankton from SpongeBob.
In the same thing.
Oh my God, this is going to be the best movie ever.
Brilliant. I'm going to start writing
very,
it
very
tonight.
Cool. So can I start to kind of bring some of these solidly down into my brain that they don't float off?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's do it.
Some of the things that reasons why we should care about plankton.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We can breathe.
We can breathe. Useful.
Yeah, that's good.
Can we say thankton? Can we say thankton?
Thankton.
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 Love a little thankton. Thankton plankton. Omega 3.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Good.
She's already struggling. Look at her.
Reducing climate change. Good.
Reducing climate change. I thought we're then like killing them though.
Yeah, but because they're plants, they're taking, when they photosynthesize, they take carbon dioxide out the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And then they take it into the deep ocean.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as they're able to, but then we've got the problem with some of the blooms that then stop that from happening because...
But so we still need to use up all that warm
The blooms still do that, right? They take the carbon dioxide out, but when they rot, they take the oxygen out of the water. So they're still taking the carbon.
And we still need to care about them because we need to stop the bad ones and just make the good ones.
Exactly.
And we need to care about the movement of them and where they go. Mm-hmm.
We do. And climate change. Climate change is messing all that up, which is annoying because it's changing what plankton can live where, which changes the whole food chain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't want dead orcas. Yeah.
So we know why we care about the plankton. We know about types of plankton.
Yes.
The physics of plankton.
Because our topic is physics. Let's make sure we're getting this right. Plankton physics.
We need some more physics in there.
We got some buoyancy stuff.
I don't personally want the physics thrown in there, but I feel like you're going to make it fun for me, so I'm willing to let this happen.
I'm going to do my best, okay? So what I tried to do on my PhD, right? So when you get super small, like as small as a plankton, mm-hmm. water stops being water like we think of it, and it becomes this really thick, mm-hmm. goopy, viscous stuff. Yeah. So like a bacteria swimming through water, when it stops swimming... It stops instantly. It doesn't. There's no like momentum where it would just like a boat where it would keep going.
Just keep going.
Okay.
It's like a jelly.
It's like thick. It's like you like swimming. Honey.
Would it be like a human in jelly?
Like honey.
Because if we're thinking about the size comparison,
or custard. I'm thinking
because those are both non-Newtonian fluids, which I think might confuse people.
Of course.
Of course.
Well, custard is definitely. I'm thinking more like treacle or golden syrup.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Golden syrup.
Yeah. Okay.
Big vat of golden syrup.
I'd swim through golden syrup.
And Anya's trying to swim through. And stop. That's it. You're going to stop.
You're just going to stop, right?
So, and then just wait a while, going.
I'd just be like, oh, yeah, give me all the golden syrup. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Sweet sugar, I'm loving it.
Yeah, okay, we got it.
Sounds like me, yeah.
Anya the plankton in the golden syrup.
I'm
there.
Awesome. So, in theory, right, it doesn't matter what shape you are because the whole idea of streamlining, like making yourself pointy so you cut through it, right,
I've got great images.
It doesn't
keep going.
Well, it doesn't matter what shape you are, right?
Doesn't matter because I'm in treacle.
So
yeah,
what you should get, according to ecological theory, is that all plankton should be spheres because that is the optimum surface area to volume ratio. And so they can take in sunlight, they can get rid of the stuff they don't need, they can absorb nutrients, they can do all that. But plankton, some are balls, but loads of them have weird and wonderful spikes.
They like to show their personality.
So a bit of us was like, me and my PhD supervisors were trying to figure out why are there so many weird and wonderful shapes? And maybe this shape played a role in helping them within like... to be mixed. So it's a little bit like a plastic bag in a wind, right? Will that plastic bag be blown upwards, towards the light, or will that plastic bag be blown downwards? And so plankton have this cool thing, phytoplankton. There's some of them, they have like arms or spikes sticking out of them like this, right? And that is to slow their sinking rate. So those diatoms, for example, which are really heavy compared to other plankton because they've got this heavy silicon, what we call a frustule. That's the posh name for their skeleton. So they have these spikes coming off of them that slow their rate of sinking so they can still get more light. And so the interesting thing is some species, if you blast them, if you put them in a jar and shake the jar for like days, like, take it. Right?
Like the kid in Finding Nemo, shaking the bag.
Right. Each subsequent generation of this particular species that has spikes, the spikes get smaller and smaller and smaller until it's a ball, right?
Because it starts being useful.
And it's a little bit like if it was in real life in the ocean, it was really stormy, then it's like, I actually want to sink away from the storm quicker. And then over, like, chill out beneath the waves. And then once you stop the turbulence, each subsequent generation gets its spikes back.
How long is a plankton lifespan?
Good question. It depends on the species, but some are a day, some are like 3 days, something like that.
Oh, they really don't live long, bless them.
Well, they're just little single cell plants.
Don't need to. Don't need to, do you?
They just do their thing.
You know, you're born, you're swimming treacle.
Bam, you're done.
Yeah. Produce some oxygen. Done.
Bam. No worries.
Yeah. Day's work.
So, yeah, it's weird.
So, we've got weirdy, beardy-shaped plankton. We've got that being because of possibly sinking, not sinking, moving through treacle?
Yeah.
Treacle. And then you've also got the physics of the water and what you're doing to that to influence the plankton.
Yes, exactly. So normally people just measure the plankton or they just measure the water. And so it's quite interesting to measure them both. Mm. But I use this really cool piece of equipment called a flow cam. And so I'll be honest, right? Not knowing anything about biology, I was a little bit nervous about having to count and identify plankton from these experiments that I was running. Mm. So what you would do normally is you get this like microscope slide, like a
one.
And
two,
it's, yeah.
Three.
Exactly. Cool. I didn't know what any of the species were or anything. So I started, and you could maybe
is it?
Yeah,
five.
You're like, what is? Yeah, so I started this, and I didn't know what any of their names were, or so I was calling them like lemon, centipede, canoe, DNA, microchip, sunflower,
Trevor,
and it was quite funny. Because one of my other supervisors, I had like a physics one and I had like a plankton one. So when I talked to the physics supervisor, she was like, also didn't know their names. So we'd have these like quite in-depth conversations.
Little code.
And we'd be like, well, it looks like the sunflowers are going up, but the microchips are going down and things like that. And it was just these most ridiculous conversations. So what happened? On Twitter, I saw this awesome machine that saved my life. And what you do is you get your sample of plankton and you just pour it in the top of it. And every time a plankton cell cuts a laser, it takes a photograph of it. And so on my laptop, I have 440,000 pictures of plankton. But it means because they're all digital, I can, first of all, send them off to people and go, what the hell is this? And secondly, it means that I can analyze them all digitally for their shape and their size. So I could look at how their shape and size affected how they behaved in different mixing.
And do you still think of some of them as sunflowers and other names? Do you still?
So I've got to tell you, can I tell you about my favorite plankton? Because this, this feeds into this, okay?
Of course. Everyone's got to have a favorite child. Absolutely.
Well, I did these experiments.
Oh, only one of them that you do a podcast with, Sarah. So,
moving swiftly on,
your favorite plankton.
So, when I did this experiment, so I went over to Sweden and I ran these experiments, and I had these big tanks and I filled the pumped water from the sea into them. So whatever plankton I got in there, I got in there. Mm-hmm. But what I didn't want was anything eating the plankton. It's a bit like trying to measure how fast grass grows and you've put a cow in the field, right? So you want to get rid of the cows. Right. So I put a filter on mm-hmm. to get rid of all like the SpongeBob plankton, the copepods and things like that, to stop them from eating plants. So then I just had the plants in there. Mm-hmm. Now, this is what completely blew my mind. Don't expect the plants to eat each other. And I was like, what the hell is going on?
And that right there is our soundbite for this episode. Well, you don't expect the plants to eat each other.
I was just like, what is going on? So there is this plankton. It's called Mesodinium rubrum. And from the side, it looks like two tennis balls with a hula skirt around the middle of it, where the tennis balls join. From the top, it looks like a sunflower because you've got the ball and you've got the hula skirt, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So what this thing does, when the cell is created, it has six tentacles. I don't know what they are. They're like arms and they stick out like this.
Yeah.
And those stop it from sinking. So it causes drag. Mm-hmm. But if something swims towards it, it can detect it by it's because its hula skirt flutters.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then it can figure out whether it's something it should eat or whether it's something it should jump away from. So if it wants to jump away, if it's something moving towards it to eat it, it wraps.
Friends, eat you. Foe, run away.
Well, this is mental, okay? How it runs away, it wraps those six tentacles around the top ball, whoosh, like that, and then it flaps its hula skirt and it jumps 1.5 centimetres, which when you're the same thickness as the
through
human hair...
treacle?
And you want to jump through treacle, it holds the world record for being the biggest jumper in terms of its body lengths. It jumps 250 body lengths. By flapping its hula skirt, right?
That is impressive.
So this is the other weird thing, is that it's a plant. And if you remember what all plant cells have, if you remember year seven, you had to draw your plant cell. It had chloroplasts, right? Which help the photosynthesis. Yeah. When mesodinium is made, it doesn't have any chloroplasts. So what it does is it eats another plankton cell, dissolves it and steals the chloroplasts, and then it can photosynthesize. I was what the fuck
Badass.
Is this creature? It's so cool. I'm going to get a plankton tattoo. I'm going to get my cousin to do it because he is also a marine biologist and also a stick and poke tattoo artist based in Barcelona.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
So I'm going to go to Barcelona and he's going to give me my mesodinium tattoo.
When you do, will you send us photographs?
I think we should all go to Barcelona and get one. Yes, please do.
Before we knew what they were called, we called them Chompy Sons because they were sons and they everything. Chompy Sons.
Brilliant.
Excellent.
Brilliant.
Oh, my God. Well, I think, you know, that is the perfect place to end on Chompy Sons, the best of the planktons.
I've had the best time, and I've loved learning about plankton, and I want a chompy son as a pet for some reason now.
Well, because they're annoying, because I wanted to get some to do an experiment on, right? And because they're like a plant and an animal, so as well as like giving it all the stuff a plant needs, you have to feed it things.
It's very needy. It's very
really,
needy.
So there is up at the Scottish Association for Marine Science in Oban. There is this thing called CCAP, which is the cultured collection of algae and protozoa. And it's like a botanic garden and a zoo combined, but it's just for plankton. And they've got like one of every species of phytoplankton.
So we could go there and see one if we wanted to. And there's somebody there going, oh, it's hungry again.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, God, I can't believe this. Why do I have to feed her?
Just keeps eating.
They have zookeepers / horticulturalists that keep them alive. It's pretty cool.
Amazing. Oh, my God.
That is a good job. Oh. Brilliant. Oh, plankton. Thankton.
Thankton.
Brilliant. Thankton.
Thankton. Thankton. Thankton. Oh, and And thank you for this episode, because this has been so much fun. I've loved it. I've never cared so much about plankton in my entire life.
Good. I'm pleased. That was my mission. I'm trying to fly the plankton flag.
Yeah, yeah. We'll fly like, that flag as well. Yeah. Brilliant.
Yeah. Flags, T-shirts, sweatshirts, maybe socks as well. Let's do a whole range.
And... It's really good.
Gone.
It's really good.
Really good gin.
I've drank that much.
Okay. That's a sensible amount.
But that much tonic.
I had to give mine away.
Good.
It's not old me. But I'm going to carry on because it's really, really nice.
I've got this much left and I think I should probably have another one
just to make sure. It needs topping up. You know, we've got to keep those up. You don't want that warm level of the gin at the top. You know, you've got to keep topping it up.
You don't. Oh, well done, Sarah. Well done. Bringing it straight back. Very clever, yeah.
I should probably put some kind of like bubbling system at the bottom of my glass.
Oh, my God. Oh, that would be quite cool. Little bubbly gin. Although I'd probably set it too high and it'd go everywhere and be a nightmare. And I don't want plankton in my gin. Although, maybe a little spirulina.
Maybe you do.
Maybe.
You've got seaweed in your gin, so there you go.
And maybe a little krill swimming around the top, because I wanted prawns earlier. So, you know, that could satisfy that, couldn't it?
Stuck in your teeth, wouldn't it?
Yeah, maybe not. Russell, thank you so much. It has been awesome. Thankton Plankton has just been fab.
Yeah.
Plankton for having me on.
I am going to so annoy everyone for the next week.
Plankton for having me on the podcast. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for my lovely gin. I've thoroughly enjoyed drinking it, and I've thoroughly enjoyed chatting to you both.
Thank you so much.
Plankton, plankton, thankton, plankton, yay. We love plankton.
We love plankton, yay!
Awesome. Who knew that SpongeBob was educational?
Well, I did.
Did you? You've never watched it. You've only ever seen the memes.
I know.
The memes educational?
Screw you, Sarah. Plankton, plankton, I think I've learned so much today.
Let's test that knowledge, shall we? Because why should we care about plankton?
Well, we should care about plankton because... ecosystems, as I said, absolutely. And maintaining, you know, oceans.
Being able to breathe. Yeah. Being able to maintain.
Being able to breathe.
That whole
Omega-3.
Omega-3. But also, they are just really tiny and amazing. And having that buoyancy, having different shapes to cope with, swimming through treacle. Plants that eat things. Chompy sun.
Plankton's really cool.
Plankton is really cool. And then you've got your nasty stuff that's toxic and can end up killing orcas, bonkers through all of that food
and
chain.
And creates oxygen deficits.
Totally.
Nightmare.
Cows. Plankton we need. Cows we don't need. Don't need cows. Need plankton. Yeah. And cows killing plankton.
You heard it here first.
In a fight, who's going to win? Cows? Should they? No. Should be plankton.
Should be plankton. Plankton, thankton.
Oh, awesome. I can't wait to listen back to this because I'm going to learn so much again.
Again, yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
And plankton produce clouds. Ah,
they do.
Just thought that.
Yeah. Oh, all these little things. Oh,
so
what a good
much.
Episode. Thank you, Russell.
Brilliant. So much to thank. And Davile, loved.
Yeah.
Really nice gin.
The more I drink, the more I like it. At first sip, I was a little, ooh. And now I'm like, ooh.
Joe, I've really enjoyed it all the way through. Really, really balanced gin. Mm. Not gimmick in sight. Good seaweed.
No.
Gonna have to drink more and go, thank you very much, little planktony planktons.
Thank you, plankton. And on that note, see you next week.
Nice. See you next week. Oi.
I'm mind boggled and I've got an empty glass, and that is Gin and Topic in a nutshell.
Oh, it is. So it was good, and we will fill that glass for next week, and we will empty our brains sieve-like and be ready to learn more next week.
Sarah, before next week, where can everyone find us?
Well, they can find us on social media at Topic Gin, or they can head over to our website at ginandtopic.com, and they can message us, they can, you know, interact with us on that social media type platforming thing. And of course, don't have to wait a whole week.
No.
Because we've got Tuesday Booze Day on Tuesday, introducing the gin. And they can always listen to episodes that they might not have listened to whilst they're waiting.
We've got 6 whole series. You've got 5 to go back and listen to if you haven't already. And we will see you on Tuesday for Tuesday Booze Day.
Nice. Cheers.
Sláinte.